We got this shit knocking low.
Hi, and welcome back to the Pure Joy Podcast. This is a bonus episode that we are airing during the hiatus. This week, I am speaking with Kathy Cheshire, who is a grief coach, and she also certifies you for grief coaching. Putting this episode together, putting the show notes together, editing the episode, all of this time I have been thinking about my own grief at losing my mother. Over 10 years ago, I was 23, and it was very confusing for me because I was extremely close with my mother, and I felt that this was a loss that would shatter me. And when it didn't, I didn't know what to make about that. I didn't know what to think. I thought, how come I'm still here? How come I'm not shattered by this loss? I felt that I had a very short grieving period and that I quickly moved back into my day-to-day life. And it gave me a moment where I really valued every moment. I remember when I first realized that my mom probably wouldn't make it because of her illness, I remember thinking, even if it's just a few months, that's an eternity. I was living every moment like it was an eternity. I was appreciating every moment. And I would like to say that that lasted forever, but it didn't. And it's a place I'm trying so hard to get back to. But while I was chatting with Kathy, I thought a lot about what's normal when it comes to grief, what's not normal, what are our expectations for grief, what should we be trying to, what points should we be trying to get to? And I thought she answered so many of my questions, and I thought it was probably one of my favorite chats so far on the show. So I hope that you also enjoy it. And next week, I will be also releasing a very interesting interview with a rapper. I don't know how I got a rapper on the show, but you will get more details next week. So please enjoy this episode and enjoy your week and just go with peace. Thank you. So I want to thank my guest this week, Kathy Cheshire. She is a master grief coach, and she has an online certification, and I just want to welcome her to the show tonight.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here.
And so I am really excited to talk to you because, as you know a little bit about the podcast, the point of this podcast is really to empower women to be their best self. And you have, for very unique reasons, focused on empowering women and men, I'm sure as well, through grief counseling. And so I want our audience to understand a little bit about you and why you are someone who they should definitely go to for this. So I want to start out with your early life, because you're very open on your website, which we will have posted on the show notes. You're very open about growing up, being the second of five children. And how was your relationship with your family growing up? Were you guys very kind of close, being that there were five children, your larger family?
We weren't, but I didn't realize the issues we had really till later. My father was very domineering, and my mother had a lot of anxiety and was depressed. And so I just plugged along doing my best, and it wasn't until bringing up as an adult issues of abuse as a child that I realized how dysfunctional we all really were. We weren't allowed to share emotion. So once you know, the abuse stuff, my older sister started talking about it, I was like, yeah, you know, I have memories. And not only were my parents My mom, my dad, and my three younger siblings, not supportive one bit, but they criticized us. And that's grieving loved ones still alive. I haven't seen them since. That was like 1995. And because it was so horrible, and it totally broke my heart and my understanding of my life. So that was my first experience with deep pain of grief.
So at the time when you made that decision, for it sounds like very necessary reasons, were you married, or did you have a support group, or were you kind of on your own?
About the same time, because I was suffering so much, my second husband went out and didn't come home till 6 a.m. one morning. So my marriage was falling apart at the same time. I've actually been divorced 3 times. I am able to see now. I was desperate for love, and I had low self-esteem. I didn't think I did. We think that we're going to be different from things we didn't like about our growing up, but we don't realize how certain things are programmed in our subconscious mind. So at the time, I was just confused. And mm-hmm. I started reading books, but I also didn't do a very good job applying them, not understanding I had these forces of these patterns in my mind that I thought were controlling me.
Mm-hmm. So you did have those 3 divorces. So was that, do you think that was more about what you were looking for, that you weren't necessarily looking for the right thing because you were traumatized by not having enough love as a child? Is that?
I was desperate for love. So when they looked like they were loving, I soaked it in, but I wasn't taking the time to find out what they were really like. Mm-hmm. And it was tumultuous, and it was devastating, and there were 3 marriages I couldn't stay in. So I finally started learning that, because real true self evolution is understanding yourself. So when I finally, and even though it was hard, learned to be patient, I met my 4th husband. We just celebrated our 12th anniversary last year. And it was a matter of me having enough love for myself that I was willing to wait to meet someone who shared my morals and ways of looking at life, and someone I could trust. So I'm a big proponent of education, taking it all in and keeping what works.
Okay. And it sounds like education, even about yourself, like that seems to be the center.
You got it.
And so you met your 3rd husband, and around that time, right before your marriage, this is when you suffer one of your greatest losses. Did you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. And the reason I share my story with such honesty is because in working with clients, at the time these things happened to me, I felt like I was the only one. Why am I having this bad luck, or am I being punished? Life can be challenging. Things happen to people. And I've heard so many stories of just unimaginable things that can happen in life, and the courageousness of how people willing to discover what's going to work for them. I think it's been worth it. It's work, but it's been so worth it. And why I like supporting other people, because I've been there. I get what they're going through. Every situation is different. But I think people really get knocked down with this heavy duty. However a person defines that, we can't really compare. A person's biggest loss is their biggest loss. Mm-hmm. And there really is an evolution, an evolving of the understanding of grief. There's a lot of confusing information out there.
Do you think it's important then not to rate your own loss, or not to rate other people's losses?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You, because what happens is, you know, you lose whatever's the worst loss you've ever had. And if you start comparing, then that can cause you to shut down releasing emotion. That can cause you to try to minimize it. And really, we want to, you know, embrace whatever emotions are coming up. Pain is just a part of being human. And we're meant to express it. And we're meant to talk about it. And so I do it not only so people know you can recover, there's hope. I'm an example of possibility of all the things I've been through, and you can get back to living, you know, whatever kind of life you want to have.
Mm-hmm. No, that's, I think that is a number one thing. We don't understand that we're resilient. And so it's this idea, yes, we can hurt beyond a recovery. So it's true. So you did lose your son, you said about a month before your wedding.
Yes, my husband and I have been together a year. My fourth husband that we just celebrated our 12th anniversary. We had been together a year. Everything was wonderful. My 16-year-old son that I put my whole life into, because I was a single mom, his dad didn't come around often, and he was in a car accident where his friend lost control of the car on the freeway. It rolled over, and my son, because he was leaning back in his seat, which people don't know, you're not supposed to do that. When he was leaning back in his seat, he went through the back window and died immediately on the freeway median. So I got that knock at the door, and I just knew, it just completely changed my life. And my wonderful husband held my hand through 3 years of barely existing. He knew I was still in there.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. I mean, you really had chosen the right person, you know, if they would help you through that.
Yes.
And
we got married because I felt if we didn't, that it would be a second tragedy on top of it at the time. And I don't regret it. I certainly wasn't in a mode I would have been waiting, but it would have felt like another blow.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel at that time that you had to defend the decision?
Not at all.
Okay.
What I experienced was nobody wanted to talk about anything, not the decision, not my child, there's just such a discomfort because grief and death is such an avoided topic. And so that's why I talk about it, because it's a part of what really helps heal.
No, I totally agree. And so I want to go a little bit more into this, and then I kind of will change the questions a little bit, but you had a double blow in a way, because you also lost another child, kind of a bonus child, you might say.
My stepson last summer.
Yes.
Yes. He got an infection. He actually lost his mom. My husband's previous wife died at the age of 36, which may be why he's such a loving, compassionate person. She went in the hospital for an blood infection, and she died a week later. And my stepson was only 11, and I think he lived from there with a broken heart. So he got an infection. He didn't take good care of himself, and he was in intensive care for a month. Just this infection ravaged his body. It was absolutely awful watching him suffer. And when he was finally getting better, a blood clot caused a stroke, and he died at the age of 29. And the pain was exactly the same. Exactly the same. But everything I learned in the 10 years after my son died allowed my husband and I, he's more naturally resilient than I. He knows how to release emotion and focus on constructive thoughts. But we got back to living shortly afterwards. And there are times we still have sadness, we still have pain, certain things trigger things. But we knew if we have to go on without our two sons, we're going to live the best life we possibly can. Mm-hmm. And we do. We have adventures. We love deeply. Our love has grown. I was so scared at times. I was really scared. You know, what's going to happen? This just cannot be true. And what happened is we applied the skills we have and have learned. And I could not be, and I now I'm even more passionate about sharing information, inspiring others to discover their own healing.
Mm-hmm. And so I want to touch on some topics I think you'll recognize as well. And we've kind of gone over them a little bit, but why do you think we need to avoid the topic of death? Like as a culture, I guess all cultures have that in them.
From the professionals I've studied, what resonated with me the most, and I've traveled a lot, but I certainly only know our culture here in the U.S. the best. And someone said, previously, you know, people had such huge communities, and death was more of a natural thing and talked about. But as we've grown and you know, everybody migrated from Europe, and then we all move and live separate, we've lost some of that. And one of the most prevalent yet hurtful things in our culture is we're just desperate for things to be perfect and for people to be okay. And we've lost sight of that innate understanding that it's okay to be sad. It's okay to be sad, but then we also need to understand how our thoughts contribute to our emotions. Our thoughts create emotion. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, you know, if we're sad and expressing sadness and, you know, whatever's coming up, if we do what I did after my son died and think thoughts like, I can't go on, life is too hard, there's no point in taking care of myself anymore, I must be being punished. When you start creating those thought habits, then you're always going to feel bad. So, and I didn't realize it at the time I was doing it. I was just mad. I was apathetic. Well, we can change. Those subconscious thought patterns feel so real and so permanent, and we feel that we're at the mercy of them, but it's not true. When I started studying neuroscientists like Dr. Bruce Lipton, they explained that's just how our mind works. So we can program it any way we want. The way to get rid of a program we don't want that doesn't serve us, that we cannot prove is true, the way we get rid of that is to replace it with other programs that we do desire. And what happens is people aren't patient. And so because it feels so strong, they keep on feeding it. And when I learned that, it just totally changed my life.
Mm-hmm. And so for you, the goal is resiliency after loss.
Yes, you know, which means resilience is the things that remain strong after you go through whatever loss it is, the death of a person or any major change in your life. Resilience is those things that remain strong. So what we lose, what we feel is broken, can be strengthened. And you can learn to not only repair it, but also keep it strong the next time you're in a situation with loss.
Mm-hmm. And so I want to talk a little bit more about the fact that sometimes we rate our losses. Do you think that's why if someone, say, loses a pet, that it can be so minimized?
Yes. That's exactly why. And for anybody out there who's lost a pet, I want you to know from someone who's lost two children that love is love is love. So not everybody loves a pet like they would a person. The relationship is different, but love is love is love. So those who lose a pet and then somebody says, oh, you know, you can get another dog, the grieving is the same. If you loved at the highest level you can love that pet, then the grief is going to be the same. And one of the worst things we do is try to shut it all down. It doesn't work. It's not how our body, how our mind, it's not how it performs in a healthy way.
Mm-hmm. Now, how do we talk to someone who's grieving? What is actually the right thing to say?
Thank you. That is a wonderful question. And I will tell you, because this is so easy. I do have a list on my website of any grief, respected grief professional who lists, here are some suggestions you can say. But the number one thing is to listen and to get that person talking. That's what they want. They want to talk about the lost loved one. They want to talk about the situation. They want to talk about what happened. So all you have to do is be in a listening mode. Ask questions or get them to tell you how they found out about the person who died or this or whatever the situation is. Listening is the number one thing.
Okay. No, that's good to hear, because I think we all, even though we've all gone through grief to some extent, we still never know what to say. And being quiet is probably the easiest thing to do.
And being with that person is so important. I can't tell you how many clients have said to me, so-and-so doesn't even talk to me anymore, or so-and-so didn't talk to me. And we can have compassion for those people because they feel uncomfortable and they don't know what to say or what to do. But I've never had a client say, this person bothered me so much. You know, the more that person can get back to fully living, which includes all the interactions they ever had with those that they love in their life, that all contributes to their healing sooner than later.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know you've talked a lot about different experts, and obviously you've done extensive research. What are some things that grieving experts disagree about?
Ooh, that's a good question too. The biggest thing they disagree about is whether or not a person needs to go to counseling or go through a certain number of steps in order to heal. Dr. George Bonanno, who is in his late 60s, has been a professor at Columbia University in New York I forget the name of it, but it's a loss center. I mean, he's researched loss his whole life. And in his studies, he finds more people are resilient, naturally resilient, 60-something percentage plus, because we don't hear about them so often. They just get back to living. We can, unfortunately, look at some of the extreme situations of people who don't heal and apply that on a too big percentage. So Dr. Bonanno actually feels that it can hurt the healing process, because someone who would have naturally healed, now you're telling them you need to do this, that, or the other. Hmm. And they would have been fine healing on their own.
Hmm. That's an interesting.
Yeah. I know. When I read his book, I was like, wow. It's very interesting. Most things grief experts agree on, but that's the one that can be life-changing, and it's up to the person. If you're if you're coping fine and you feel good, don't tell the person they're not. Don't say you need to go to counseling every single time you have a loss.
Hmm. Yeah, I can see that. You know, if you're emotionally healing on your own, that makes sense.
Yes.
And people grieve differently. Do you feel that gender makes a difference in how you grieve?
Absolutely, depending on the culture. Men are taught, you know, it's not manly to show emotion. But I have lots of male clients, and they want it to be more private. Whereas women will talk to each other and share more. But it really affects men just as much as it would a woman. They just feel differently depending on what their culture is on how private or not private they want to share their grief. And men need more alone time. Women are connectors. So I felt so good about understanding when my husband's child died, when I needed to give him time by himself. Whereas the old me would have, are you okay? You know, he needed that time, and I could tell when he did. So that felt good that I could support him in that way.
Mm-hmm. In the way that he needed. That's
exactly.
That is important. And what about children? How can, and this is a question I've been hearing a lot, actually. Not only I would ask, how can we help children grieve, but also I would add a little bit to that, like, when is it appropriate, like, what age is it appropriate to bring a child to a memorial service? So
what I tell parents is, teach yourself about grief, because you can't tell something to the child that you're not exhibiting yourself. It's very confusing. And only a parent knows that child best. What the grief experts say is, of course a child can go to a funeral at any age. We've made death and what happens afterwards in certain situations secretive, and it's helpful to children to be able to play an age-appropriate part. And honesty is super important. Saying something like, you know, grandma's asleep now forever isn't helpful to a child. They need to know that, you know, grandma was sick and grandma died and we still love her. And talk about whatever the child brings up. Children are smart. And if they're asking questions, answer them. And if you don't have an answer, if it feels important to you, go research an answer.
Mm-hmm. So the, you know, it sounds like there is no need to avoid talking about death.
No.
With children. Okay.
Absolutely not. Because they'll make up their own stories. And we would rather them know the healthy truth about life. And we all die, and whatever your beliefs are, you know, to share that with the child, or give them the opportunity to understand varying beliefs and decide for themselves, is a much healthier way to grow up. I've read so many stories about children who weren't allowed to be a part of what happened after their parent or loved one died, and it just haunted them for their adult life.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, to touch a little bit more on this, and obviously you've gone through this, when you feel like someone had a lot more potential left in their life and you lose them, how do you specifically deal with that?
I feel that that is an unconstructive thought, that life isn't that way. Life isn't that we all are here with 75 years of potential, and so the potential's lost if my child died at 16. I used to think that, but that did not serve me whatsoever, and it's not true. What's true is we shouldn't dwell on it, but any of us can die at any time. A child, an adult, any of us can die. So we want to live our lives the most amazing way we can every second. Not only loving ourselves and cherishing how we go about each day, but also those we love. That's what's taught me to do.
Mm-hmm.
The death of my child was the birth of my learning how to live. I was robotic before. I held my breath is what it felt like. I held my breath through life.
Mm-hmm.
We're here to enjoy life, but there's free will, and sometimes things cross and accidents happen. And so I look at life differently now, and it feels more real and it feels healthier.
Mm-hmm. So that, I mean, people don't always think of it that way. And I know that's something that you do talk about, that we can learn from our grief. So that's a really good point. Now you talk a little bit about we have in this conversation about the differences in grieving. So what about someone who feels like they've never stopped grieving? Does that mean they can't have a happy life?
No, it doesn't. If a person, well, are you talking about this whole thing of you never get over it? You will grieve forever? Is that what you mean?
Well,
are you saying if someone's grieved for 20 years, can they still figure out how to have a happy life?
I think the second one, yes.
I believe a person can learn at any point in time that they want to. And that is the key. If a person isn't ready, willing, and able to seek out information that is going to help them. And so often, those 20 years they spent grieving was thinking those negative thoughts. If they're still in deep, deep grief, you cling on to these thoughts that just aren't true. So yeah, people can learn at any time. And why I created a grief coach training program is because it doesn't have to be as complicated as it was for me. I had such disjointed information and confusing and people saying we know it all and we're the best. And no, it's about finding what's the best for you. Mm-hmm. And a great place to start is what all the grief experts say. They're working with the most people, but you don't have to agree with any of it. But then what are you going to agree with? If you're stuck, insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result, that you'll heal from grief. It's not going to happen. You got to do some taking in of new information until something clicks. But a lot of people don't want to do that. I just accept that. I can plant a seed, I can share my story, but some people's thought patterns are so strong, they don't believe they can break away. You have to believe you can. I believe we all can. Look where I came from. I lived in bed for 3 years, drinking wine and taking sleeping pills.
Oh my gosh.
Until it was like, what was that movie? Groundhog Day. One day I just woke up and I said, this is crazy. I'm trying to sleep as long as I can, but that goes like a second, and then I wake up to the same hell again. I got to do something different.
Mm-hmm. And when you work with people, do you find that a lot of people feel guilt? Because if they are happy, then it's a betrayal of the person that they lost.
Absolutely. And that's another unconstructive thought that you can create into a heavy duty thought pattern. And it's not true. We're supposed to live, no matter what's going on in our life, with the full range of emotion. Mm-hmm. I teach people you can have joy while you're grieving. People think if you're grieving, that's it. You're going to be sad for whatever period of time, maybe forever. But you can simply by allowing it. I have clients who secretly tell me, you know, I crack jokes. You know, my spouse passed away and it's the worst pain I've ever had. But, you know, people think that's inappropriate. And I'm like, you do what you feels best for you. That's a shot of positive chemicals through your body. What, you know, emotions release chemicals. We can get stuck in fight or flight like I was forever. Or we can train our brain to be thinking always about things that are in our best interest and that we believe is true. That releases love chemicals and joy, pure joy chemicals.
Yeah, there you go.
And that's what gets me excited about getting up every day, because I know stuff's going to happen I don't like, but I'm going to deal with whatever it is. I'm going to put in perspective when something bad happens. Now I look for the lesson rather than the unyielding suffering.
Mm-hmm. That's a really beautiful thought. There's something else, I think, as I was reading that I am very curious about, so I want to ask you about this. So how does the law of attraction work with death and suffering?
Ooh.
You may have already explained it. It's just I've never, you know, I'm very interested in this.
Yes. The law of attraction basically says whatever you put out there, you attract.
Mm-hmm.
So that fits right into this thing we talked about with our subconscious thoughts and our conscious thoughts. We control our conscious thought. That's mindfulness. That's being aware of the thoughts. So if we're aware of things we don't want and replace it with things that we do, We are working the law of attraction because we're focusing on what we desire. We have the intention to heal from whatever's gone on. And this is what I experienced. Oh my gosh, here I am talking to you. And, you know, I was also, I believe that, so law of attraction is we're all made of energy. Okay. Mm-hmm. Neuroscientists now think everything's energy, that relates to the, we are all one, everything's energy. So what you put out there is what you're going to attract to you. So if you're constantly thinking discouraging thoughts, you're not going to attract positive things in your life that you want. And what I found is when I started taking charge, I felt empowered to control my mind. I also started getting inspirations. I cleared out all the negative junk and I could like feel the universe talking to me. It said, write a book about thriving after the death of a child. And once I start, okay, you know, and then the old thought pattern, well, who do you think you are to do that? You can't do that. I ignored it. I embraced it with love, those negative thoughts. I understand why they're there. It's a pattern that was instilled in me, some from my family, some from myself. And then I started writing this book and boom, it just came out. And then all this has evolved in helping and inspiring other people to create their best life after loss. You can do it, but you gotta do something to learn new information for you. So when I'm coaching, I don't tell people what to do. I figure out where they are and where they want to be and help them to come up with the plan to get there.
Mm-hmm.
How they can attract what they want in their life.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it sounds like you are a great coach, but also I hope that people understand that you do certify people, correct, as grief coaches. So.
And here's how the law of attraction worked. I did all this wonderful coaching and I love helping people understand grief and how to take control of their life. And then I started having the inspiration to do my own program. You know, no one's talking about this mindfulness stuff. And you can't just release emotion if you're constantly thinking bad thoughts. Mm. And then in 2 weeks, three people contacted me and said, how do I do what you do? And I said, hey, here's what I'm thinking. I put a little advisory group together and bam, I'm currently training 8 coaches with hardly even promoting the program yet.
Mm-hmm.
So and it's such a great feeling to know that that's just going to continue. I used to live my life, I'm going to be a CEO, or, you know, I'm going to make a lot of money. And I drove myself. I never enjoyed the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Now I enjoy I'm so thankful for Pure Joy Podcast. What a wonderful name of a podcast. Empowering women. It's just fantastic. And I'm loving every second of this. I don't worry about the future anymore because I feel what I'm doing with my heart and with my passion and with these making these inspirations, putting the motion to the inspiration. I feel like the future will just unfold.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a beautiful thought, and thank you. Let me ask you this. I feel like there's so much here for listeners to unpack, and we will have links to everything, including your book. But how do you define joy? I ask everybody that.
For me, it's a feeling, and it guides me. Thoughts are the language of the mind, and emotions are the language of the body. And so when I feel joy, I keep doing what I'm doing. When something isn't joyful, I kind of might pay a little attention as to why, but I avoid it. Even sometimes there's been times, I'll tell you the funniest story. This women friends of mine, my husband rides a motorcycle. We were in this club and I met these wonderful women, and they're like, this is so fun, you gotta ride a motorcycle, and it's the most joy in the world. And so I got my license. I hated it. I just hated every second of it. And I thought, this is crazy. I'm trying to create joy from something that's good for somebody else, not good for me. Mm-hmm. So I keep doing the things in life that give me that feeling of joy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, that is, I'm very happy with this. So, is there anything else that you want to say or add to this conversation?
I've had a life of unimaginable loss, and I'm now living a life I never dreamed I could. Not only that these losses would all accumulate, but when I was in the dark night of the soul, they call it, I never even had for a second a bit of hope. I'm thankful wherever that came from, but I am here for whoever is ever at that point to let them know there's hope. There's hope for whatever point they want to get to in their life. And sometimes I believe, because I didn't have examples back then, sometimes a person just needs to know it's possible. It's possible to be in pain and to be suffering and to heal from it. It's possible. So take charge, learn in the areas where you're feeling challenged, and go after that amazing life for whatever time you have left here.
Mm-hmm.
Doctors will say, doctors, neuroscientists, that they see people when they're told you only have a little bit of time to left, and then they go live these amazing lives, and then their life is extended. Do that now. I'm not saying live like you're going to die tomorrow. That sounds horrible. But we're all going to die at some point. We're going to. So do you want to be at the end going, I wish I woulda, wish I woulda? No. You want to be doing what you want to be doing now. Whatever that is for you as an individual that brings you joy. I think we're supposed to be here to experience joy.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I like that you bring out, too, that sometimes we do have to accept the sadness to get through it, but we can get back to a place of having joy. So
absolutely.
And so, I mean, it sounds like that is going to be, you know, when you counsel people, you are getting people past a point of, I think you said, deep grief, so that they can get back to that place where they are actually happy and that they deserve it. Like you said, they don't deserve to be unhappy because they lost someone.
A big part of what a grief coach does is remove limiting beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And those can come from anywhere. Those can come from culture. Those can come from family. That can be something we told to ourselves. We are powerful beings, and we can have whatever we want.
Mm-hmm.
We can have it, but we got to go after it.
That's true.
And a coach is here to help.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for being on this podcast tonight. I really appreciate it. I think that you have, you've given an interview that will give people a lot of hope who are in a dark place. We don't know how to grieve. It's so true. I can remember times that when I lost someone, I did think like, this is supposed to end everything. You think that's how grief works. It ends everything. So I think that it's wonderful that you are putting out a message to people that that's the exact opposite of what's supposed to happen.
Yes, and I'm very grateful for you having this mechanism to be able to get the message out. And I'm doing one part. There's a lot of people that are trying to change how we look at grief. It's really evolving and changing, and I'm just thrilled to be a part of it. And thank you for, I'm glad our paths crossed on Facebook.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love what you're doing.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode.
You can now find us on Stitcher.
Don't forget, if you like what you hear on Pure Joy Podcast, please hit that like button. If you want to be notified when we have new episodes, please go ahead and subscribe. You can find us online at www.purejoypodcast.com. And if you want to support, you can go ahead and hit that donate button, which will send you to our GoFundMe link. Thank you. Auf Wiedersehen.
Thank you.